Welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe. I'm Ewan Spence.
And I'm Scott Matthewman.
And today, post-Fringe, let's talk about reviews. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. It's your Edinburgh Fringe podcast in September. Yes, I know I said we were going to go into the archives, and strangely enough, you still could. You just have to go into the archive of this podcast to get the archive podcast of the previous archive. But, you know, for September, I wanted just to take sort of a feeling of the fringe. There's been a lot of discussion points that have come out at the end of August. The fringe is very much in flux. It is. In most years, but this year more than most. There's a couple of topics that I wanted to explore in just a little bit more depth. One of those is reviews, the sort of currency of the fringe. And to help me talk about that, I've invited Scott Matthewman onto the podcast. Hello, Scott.
Thank you for having me.
We should point out at the top that once upon a time, Scott, you helped give me money for this podcast.
I did, yes. This was back when I was working for the stage, and for several years we ran the Fringe podcast together. Well, you did all the work, and I basically sat in London and took the glory.
And signed the checks.
Not me personally, but yes, I put the checks in front of the people who did.
Always nice to have these up front. Scott, you don't work for the stage anymore. I don't get paid by the stage anymore, but we've got that all up front because I think that's important. I think it's important to talk about what's behind. And we are going to be talking a little bit about publication, about business and about everything. But so, Scott, tell us a little bit about yourself before we start talking about reviews.
Okay. So I've been reviewing theatre for 15 to 20 years now. I lose count. And started at the stage where I learned how to write very short reviews and really pack a punch there. And I've since moved on to online publications where the word count is higher. But I've really tried to take that same spirit of making sure that every word counts through to the longer reviews. And now I write for the Reviews Hub, for Musical Theatre Review, and for Musicals Magazine.
Is Edinburgh any different for reviewing? Apart from the volume, because we know there's a lot of shows in a short time period, but in terms of reviewing a piece of theatre at Edinburgh compared to, say, somewhere in London, what's the difference, if any?
That's a tough one. I think London in particular has a lot of parallels. If you look outside the West End and the only briefly off West End, there is still quite a strong fringe ethos going on, which has a lot in common with the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And indeed, there is Camden Fringe that goes on at the same time as Edinburgh for those theatre companies that don't feel they can yet afford to go up to Edinburgh. And I think the way that people, reviewers, approach fringe shows is often a little bit more dismissive than it should be. And sometimes it's, I think it's seen as a lesser thing to be reviewing, which is not my take. I find that fringe theatre is possibly the most adventurous, the most dangerous, the silliest, the funniest. You get the widest range of theatre on the fringe than you do in the larger venues.
Said there, working many, many years in this. Let's go back to the time that it was perfect. It was wonderful. When reviews would fall off trees like confetti with gold-tinged stars that would open the doors to fame and fortune, which, as everybody knows, was the year before they started doing theatre or comedy or stand-up. It was always better in the past. But it was better in the past, wasn't it, Scott?
I don't know whether it was. I think there's, back in the past, I think we had fewer reviewers who had publications with money behind them. so they could actually afford to spend time on the review and craft something really worth reading. Whereas now, sort of like that, you have to really, as a reviewer, have to work much, much harder to get your review to something that is not just a formulaic, like, this is what happens, and this is the bit I liked, and this is the bit I didn't like. To actually get something that you like, you want your readers to enjoy as much as, but differently to, the production that you're reviewing. I think there, when you've got, in the past, you've got a few reviewers with huge audiences, those reviewers get a huge amount of cachet just with their name and their brand. But because print publications are not read as much as they used to be, so they don't have the money to put into as many reviewers and reviewing as many productions as they used to, that cachet of print publications has gone down. At the same time, you've got more reviewers online than you've ever had before, with a much wider spectrum of opinions, of life experience, and some of which are really, really enjoyable. But their reputation is not quite as high. So, rather than having these several huge pillars of respectable criticism, if you like, you've actually got a much leveler playing field. You can tell why I write and not why I speak.
Is there a happy medium? When you look at the landscape now, is there somewhere that's one of these online but has time? Are there names out there that you think sort of straddle all of that and create the perfectly decent reviewer?
That's a tough question to ask. Yes, I think there are for me, but I think the crux for me is that different people want different things from a review, and different reviewers now have the freedom to actually create reviews in different forms. Like, I had a friend who is making a career out of video reviews on YouTube, and it's just, they're not for me. I don't enjoy sitting there watching somebody talk about the show. I prefer to read about it, but he's really good at what he does. So it's actually, like, I think it's a much more democratic system here than we have now. But the problem with that is finding people who are like a good match for reader and reviewer and production is a lot harder, because there's so many people trying to do it out there. And that means that actually finding the good ones is harder as well.
And I suppose the fringe brings that into sharp focus, because, as we all know, there are far more shows in far more venues in a much shorter space of time, all trying to find reviews. And yeah, there are more reviewers, but the publications that we're getting registering according to the Fringe Office are smaller. So there is an increased level of pressure at Edinburgh than you would see anywhere else.
Yeah. And I think also, and you might also appreciate that there are a lot of individuals reviewing now who wouldn't necessarily think of registering themselves as a publication. There are people who go out and like just buy their own tickets and review what they've seen. And I think they are not any less valid than somebody who's gone through media accreditation. But yeah, it's like, I think particularly with when you get festivals like the Fringe, where you have so much content that really wants to be reviewed, that's a very different proposition from theatre anywhere at any other time of year, where you have basically it's a scarcity of content compared to the amount of people willing to write about it.
How important are those reviews to companies leaving the Fringe?
That is something you would have to ask the companies. I think the reviewer would have a very different answer to a theatre company. from a reviewer point of view, I always like try and look back once something is of mine has actually been published. I'll read it back and just think, so like, have I actually A, caught the impression of what it was like to be in the audience, which is the key thing. B, have I messed up? To be honest, and so like, have I actually sort of like made it sound like it's like something that it's not? Have I misrepresented anything that I would have to email my editor and go, oh no, sorry, I've got to change that. Thankfully, that doesn't happen.
And thankfully, we're not that much in print anymore.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, I don't think it's like if anything egregious slips through, then the advantage with online publication is you can actually correct for it. But for a theatre company, I think it has become tricky because they obviously want to reuse reviews for the best possible publicity. And for a quick hit of that, the best thing that they do is find the 4 and 5 star reviews. And what has been happening recently is that those 4 and 5 star reviews have been coming from newer names, and you get people who are more associated with the old guard giving out the impression that if a new reviewer gives 4 or 5 stars, it's worth less than someone who's been doing it for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And I'm not sure I agree with that sentiment.
There is a certain level of gatekeeping there in the old guard.
The number of people who can actually eke a profession out of reviewing has gone way down. I think there are very few national newspaper critics who only review theatre and don't do any other sort of freelance writing. And for most of us, like one of the publications I write for pays quite nicely for the work that I do for them, but I have a full-time job as well. So theatre criticism will never be a reliable source of income for me. And for a lot of people out there, it's just not any income at all. It may even be out of pocket, because even if they end up on PR companies' press lists, they still have to fork out for transport, for all the other ancillary costs of going out for the evening. And I think the other thing to point out is that, like, if theatre criticism is going to survive, it has to bring in new people. And those new people don't have the traditional means of going to a national newspaper, becoming a theatre critic for a national newspaper, and building up a career over several decades. They are going to have to learn somewhere. And with blogs, with social media, with TikTok and YouTube, there are so many platforms now that people can actually start that publication process for themselves. That does mean that they don't necessarily have the editors and the mentors that working for a publication will give you. Like, I did some reviews before I joined the stage, but it was only at the stage where I was working with a really great reviews commissioner and a really great editor, where I actually learned how to structure a review so that the word count that I was given actually was used to its best advantage. But that was also guiding me to write reviews in that style that worked for that publication. And I'm not sure the same style would necessarily be the best starting point for a new reviewer working in new media. It's something they might have to actually just work out for themselves by seeing what works with their audience and what doesn't.
And if we bring that to Edinburgh, one of the things that Edinburgh can do, we're always told, is to find stars on the stage, in whatever discipline. But it also sounds like what you're suggesting there, that the Fringe can be a great crucible to start your reviews career, to start being a critic, as well as what you're critiquing.
I think it can be. I think I wouldn't necessarily recommend somebody jumping in feet first into the Fringe as their very first attempt at reviewing. I think finding somewhere that is slightly less mad would be a good start.
So, sometimes where you get that headspace after a show to just think, what did I see? And just try and process that. Yeah. Because in 5 years' time, you can look at something and go, ah, yes, now I understand.
Yes.
You need time to get there.
Yes. And time is the most scarce resource at the Edinburgh Fringe, basically. So if you're going to go there, it's so expensive to actually stay in Edinburgh while you're there. So you feel that you have to actually be working every single minute of every single day. And if that doesn't ever give your brain time enough to context switch into recall and writing mode, then it's not going to work, and it's not going to make you a better reviewer. So I would say, for anybody who's thinking of reviewing, yes, have a goal of reviewing at Edinburgh, but make sure you're in peak reviewing fitness, if you like, before you head it. It's like you wouldn't go to the world championships of any sport just without doing any sort of prep beforehand. So make sure you're in a good nick before you actually head into a festival.
A lot of the acts this year talked about not getting reviewers in, not getting reviews, not able to get the word out, not being able to find them. Is reviewing broken at the Fringe, or is that something that I don't think it's something we hear from artists every year? There's always, oh, I didn't get my reviews in. But this year for me, it just felt that there seemed to be more of a disconnect in that covenant.
Yeah, I wasn't at Edinburgh this year, so I can't necessarily speak to that. But it does sound like we might need to concentrate on how all these new people who want to review, who and are maybe doing it under their own steam, how can they find the shows to review, and how can the companies know that those people are there so they can actually offer them seats to review? And it sounds like they should. I don't know what the press accreditation system is at Edinburgh, but it would seem to me that you are going to need some form of central system for that. It's going to be a lot easier for a centralized system to be able to connect these two groups of people together than expect every theatre company to have a list of reviewers. I don't know how to actually reconcile that. That it ought to be possible, but I think it's going to need money. That's the problem.
And yes, everybody is applying for the media accreditation through the central, through Fringe Central, through the office. Hand on heart, this year the Fringe podcast didn't register. I had the forms, it was there, and I'm but all the people that I need to hear from have already reached out to me independently, and there were theatre companies and stand-ups and musicians all coming in to me independently because they were able to find the podcast online. So I didn't feel the need to actually register for the media accreditation. So if there was a system, I wasn't in there. But I do know people who were in that system, and they got every single press release from every single company that was just like, please come see us, please come and see us. And then
it's a job of filtering.
Yeah.
And how do you actually work out which ones you have to go and see if you can only afford to be in Edinburgh for a short period of time? And that's what all I would say to people planning for 2024 is maybe think about, if you're a reviewer who doesn't necessarily have a huge recognizable brand or whatever you want to call it, if you go to see the same shows that everybody else goes to see, you're not going to stand out. So why not look for the shows that A, appeal to you, but B, are also going to appeal to your specific audience and are not necessarily going to be the big shows that everybody else is going to be talking about. So if you review something that is struggling for reviews, the theatre company will promote you because you are promoting the theatre company. And you'll also get to see some theatre that very few people else have ever seen. So that's going to be great as well.
It also strikes me that this is, we're getting to the situation and talking about filtering here again, because what you've talked about there is somebody who's new to the Fringe filtering to find other people who are, let's say, are new to the Fringe as well, or might have a small production somewhere. But where are the tools for that? Because somebody, and this is an open question to everybody listening as well. that's it. You're going to solve absolutely everything sitting there, Scott, in the next 30 seconds. You're going to come out with a perfect solution to everything wrong with the Fringe. There are very few tools for the filtering. You know, the Fringe office has a tick box, and that's it. And if you're a reviewer who's not doing this full time, where do you find the time to go through the tsunami of press requests?
That is a very good question.
And it tends to be two tsunamis, because then you'll get the, hey, did you get my press release about the show 48 hours later? It's like, the chances are we got it. The chances are it's just like, this is not for us. But if we take time to say that, it's going to take a minute, and that...
It's absolutely. And this is, I'll be perfectly honest, this is one of the reasons why I write for publications rather than doing stuff off my own bat, because that means somebody else does that work for me. So, and that is the downside of being your own publisher, in effect, is that you not only have to be writer, you have to be editor, you have to be commissioner, you have to be the person who actually selects the shows and communicates with them, and then also you have to market yourself and like publish the review and make sure that people see the review and push it out on all your socials. And if you're a one person band, that actually leaves very little time for actually seeing theater, thinking about theater, and writing theater, which is tricky. There are some people out there who are doing a really good job as one person publications. But the ones who are really good at that very quickly are hiring other reviewers. So they're becoming a team with a single style of reviewing under a single brand that just happened to start out as a one-person operation. And I think that's because that makes the whole administration side a little bit easier to bear.
Which is great over 3 or 4 years.
Exactly.
But again, it's not an easily replicatable solution. Replicatable is also quite a difficult word to not say easily as well.
Yes. And I think this is another reason why be very careful before diving into Edinburgh, because if you're not careful, just like the Edinburgh Fringe will break most administration systems if you're not very, very careful. So build up before you go to Edinburgh, build up your technique for managing your time, for coordinating with PRs and theatre companies, and know exactly what you're doing. And if you decide you're going out to Edinburgh, be prepared that you won't have a desk to actually do all that from. Can you actually do it from your mobile phone, or like, if you're very lucky with space in a bar or a coffee shop where you can actually get your laptop out and find working Wi-Fi. But you have to actually be rigorous and regimented about that side if you're going to have any hope of being able to devote most of your brain to appreciating and critiquing theatre.
So from a practical point of view, for the Fringe next year, what would you like to see as a reviewer, Scott? And I don't mean what show would you like to see, because obviously we all want to see the musical rendition of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table on ice on Mars with a special appearance by Rick Wakeman's manager. I mean, I would love to see that show, by the way. If anybody wants to do that and you get it in 53 minutes, yes, please, that's it. I will come and review it. But what would you, what can the Fringe Society do? What can companies do? What can Edinburgh do to allow reviewers to come up, to have more reviews, to have more of that currency leaving Edinburgh?
I think this is a tough one for me because I haven't reviewed in Edinburgh for years. So my direct experience of the current situation is very, very limited, to the point of negligible.
Which I could counter with, why haven't you come up to Edinburgh Review, and what do you need to see? It's the same answer, but a different question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one thing's like, I have a full-time job. So that would mean having to take days out my annual leave. And also the cost of traveling up to Edinburgh if you're not in the area normally. And if you're not in the area normally, then finding accommodation. So sort of like money is the big stumbling block for theatre companies, for reviewers, for anybody in Edinburgh in August, quite frankly. But then also, I think, it's like you see a lot of people just going through the like fringe program and just like getting completely overwhelmed by the sheer number of productions out there. And it's been a while, but I think if the websites and apps that the Fringe Society provides can actually give you a better experience of being able to find the shows that you are actually going to be interested in, even if you don't know what they are when you start your search, which is the key thing, then that can help a lot. But then also sort of like, is that geared towards like members of the public attending? Or does it offer facilities for reviewers to be able to get in contact with theatre companies to book review tickets in for and things like that? I don't know whether that does. So, but I would say, so like there is a different level of requirement when you are putting on a catalogue of theatre shows for people buying tickets and for people who actually want to work out what they need to review. And I think if the Fringe Society is serious about getting in new reviewers and getting reviews of the complete breadth of amazing shows that the Fringe offers, then I think actually finding ways in which they can actually gear their technology up to connecting those two groups of people is going to be crucial.
And there we go. Practical answers. It's about connections, which is what reviews are. The reviews are there to help you as a reader to connect to a show. Shows are there to help connect themselves to readers. The place of the reviewer is an important one, but it is just one part of the fabric of the Fringe and of theatre as a whole. And it's complicated, and we are not going to get a 30-second answer out of here. But we have got to step forward there in terms of find a way to make better connections between the groups and facilitate more dialogue between.
We really need people to be able to contact theatre companies and for theatre companies to be able to have conversations with reviewers before the Fringe starts, while the Fringe is going on, even though nobody has time during the Fringe, but also afterwards as well. So to do follow-ups, to actually see, particularly if the theatre company is taking that same show elsewhere, do they actually want to reconnect with a reviewer who had some things to say and potentially do some communication around the show as it goes further? So there's lots of stuff that we can do. And I think you do have to be careful. Certainly the old guard, if you like, way of reviewing was to be completely standoff from theatre companies and theatre people, to actually be sort of like, I'm going to be so impartial that I'm not ever going to talk to anybody in theatre. That doesn't really work these days, but you do still have to be a little bit careful that you're not so tied up with a particular theatre production that it risks your impartiality as a reviewer. But that should never be an excuse for poor communication.
So one other step of communication then. Scott, where can people find out more about you, get in touch, all of that malarkey?
Probably the easiest is Twitter or X or whatever it's called this week.
I'm going to go with Odeo, just because I'm so old school. I remember before it was called Twitter. All that's happened before is all happening again, folks.
Yes. So I'm Scott M on Twitter, or if you go to about.me/ScottMatthewman, there's links to all my other stuff there, or authory.com/ScottMatthewman has all my reviews.
And as we say throughout August, and we'll continue saying, all of those links for those websites and materials are back on our website, edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com. We got comments there, so we can start a conversation there, or on Twitter or on Facebook. There's various bits and pieces around the Edinburgh Performers Forum on Facebook. I suspect it's going to be a good place to carry those sort of discussions on throughout the year. But for now, Scott, it's good to catch up with you again. And thanks for coming on the pod.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Edinburgh Fringe Show, hosted by Ewan Spence, produced by The Podcast Corner. Listen to more from The Fringe at edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com.